Welcome, everyone. Thank you. I'm Patrick, Associate Pastor for Mission and Pastoral Care, and going to introduce in a minute our panelists, but I want to start first just with a little setting the stage. There we go. So, goal this morning is to take you on a little trip, to take you to a place that spins around in circles like a blue orb of greatness. What did I say? There we go. To take you inside the United Orphanage and Academy in Moyes Bridge, and this is indeed us pulling in on our most recent trip. Not the first time we did when we were there, but I want you to get the feeling of what it's like to proceed through the gates of the Orphanage and the Academy. And while you're doing it, have thoughts of blue circles spinning through your head. There you go. Because this morning we're going to have you go through the gates as well. And we're going to do so in a way that is not just about the United Orphanage and Academy, I hope, but also about what it means to be called into fuller faith and service, which is the theme for adult ed this year. People drive on the left, if you didn't know, in Kenya, so none of you freaked out there in that moment, but when we're there is often a sort of deep breath. But this is indeed us pulling into the community. Bye-bye. We'll talk more about those restrooms here in a minute. They have a story. But there we are. That's the preschool, the administration building. To the left there is the academy. And to the right, I think we pan over, but if not, we'll see it later, is the original orphanage there, kind of to the right. So, sorry. All right. Here you are. Okay. So I want to start with a picture that I return to from time to time because it reminds me of the why and the what. Because we can get very focused so much on the how that it's really helpful sometimes to stay, reconnect ourselves with the why and the who. And for me, this picture says a lot, the smiles on our faces, the fact that I'm wearing gym shoes and athletic shorts because I tried to play soccer, what they call football, not so well. In fact, the very first moment, they kicked it right through my legs, and I watched them go. And I don't want you to focus so much on the big dome that's very distracting in the image, but there's one person in particular who seems to be noticing what I want you to see as well, and that would be this girl here. And you'll notice what she has her gaze on is this. When I see that, I feel what I felt when I first felt it, if that makes any sense. And in fact, one word I would use to describe it is surprise. Like, whoa, what is this? That I get to hold this girl's hand and to feel a warmth and a love arise in me that I'm not going to say I never felt before, but it was like coming home to a feeling that we don't get to have every day. And a recognition that, you know, this whole faith thing is mind-blowing. It doesn't make sense. How is it that I, from all the way from Alexandria, Virginia, can come to this place and hold this girl's hand and feel this way? We sing that hymn in our hymn book, "In Christ There Is No East or West, in Him No North or South." And I felt that there, and I know the people sitting up here have their own experiences of that feeling, of that connection, and we're going to hear more about that. What I hope today is that you will feel something of that, and that you will learn about our ministry in Kenya. For many of you, you've known this story. You've heard this story before. This will be a reintroduction and an update. For some of you, I hope anyway, I'm looking around, this may be all new or relatively new. And I hope that this not only connects you with what we're doing in Kenya, but what maybe God is calling you to be. Not everyone here is going to end up there. But every one of us here is being called to a place where there is someone's hand that we are being asked to hold and someone's hand that is holding us. And so I hope as part of our time, and it's harder to structure this part of it, that our conversation we can talk about what it is that gift gives us, what it asks of us, so that we can recognize that as we're called to deeper faith and service through our faith. Okay, so just to place us, I'm actually going to stop here and do introductions. So right now, I'm going to ask our esteemed panel to just say your name, and this will not be your only time to speak, so don't feel like this is it. But introduce yourself and tell us how you've come to be connected with the United Orphanage Academy. And then we'll stop there, and then we're going to go into some history. Where are things now? What are some of the current things we are celebrating? What are some of the challenges that we face? And then open up to this larger discussion of how we open ourselves to being holding a child's hands that we never would think we'd meet. So I'm going to start with Candace, and asking her to tell us where and how she's connected to the United Orphanage Academy would be like asking Eve, how did you get all started up with this creation thing? if Don, if you could give her the mic, and Candace, just introduce yourself and tell us how it is you've come to be sitting where you are now to talk about this project.
Candace Rush through Henry Rush.
That was the very abbreviated version. Okay, we're going to talk more history. We'll hear more about that soon. So why don't we go back to Don, and then we're going to go.
I don't need that. Donnie Smiles, and once again, Henry Rush, he stopped me. Huh? To get donations.
So. How many times have you been to Kenya?
I went twice.
Twice, okay.
And
let's use the mic so people can, and if people are listening at home.
If you're listening, okay. I went twice. The first time was Henry's last. Okay. He told me when we were there walking around the church, we saw many, many churches, that he felt that this was his last trip to Africa. And it was.
He felt that.
He told me that.
Wow.
Did I say my name? Donnie?
Don Smiles. Thank you, Donnie. Can you pass it down to Gail then?
Hi. Is it on?
It is.
I'm Gail Yoxheimer. I have been to Kenya, to the orphanage, three times. 2006, 2010, 2016. And, I met Esther, they pair you with one child. And Esther was 6 years old when I first met her. And she and her sister were at the academy. And they were there because their parents were killed in an auto accident. And the grandparents could not take care of them. But Esther goes for every Sunday dinner with her grandmother. It's just a wonderful experience. Just wonderful.
Gail is a person of renown at the Academy. Wouldn't she? Best Dressed Award. And she has I'm sorry, Paul, but she brought an album for you to look at after the class.
Well, I'm Paul Vanson. I guess I'm kind of the newest. I went in 2016. With Gail and Ken. I did not go this very last time. I couldn't. I was under the knife in a hospital at the time, but everything came out all right. I got interested because I was interested in the International Missions Committee at a previous church before joining Westminster. I had been involved with my wife, Mary, who's at the back, packing many 40-foot containers for a Presbyterian school in Liberia. So we kind of were involved with African missions from another Presbyterian church. And I could just add as a side, I've been surprised at the number of other Presbyterian churches, even within this presbytery, who are associated with some various kinds of orphanages or schools in Kenya. Burke and Clifton Presbyterian, and there's one in Annandale Presbyterian that's involved as well. So there's a lot of more churches than I thought. And Bushill was involved with the one in Liberia. So there's more churches than I thought that have kind of paired with orphanages and schools in Africa. Not necessarily in Kenya, but Kenya is a quite popular choice, I think, because they were both Kenya and Liberia were quite devastated with both natural causes and unfortunately man-made causes in some cases, in Liberian case. So.
Thank you, Paul. I'm Ken Neiman. Not unlike Donnie, I first became involved in the United Orphanage through the Henry Rush Vortex, who sucked me in 2006. Was actually my first trip to Kenya. Myself, and I see if there's a few others in this room that were on that trip. I see Paul there, and Gail was on that trip. I've been back three times since, in 2012 and 2016 and again in 2017. I came at it from a slightly different perspective because my daughter is adopted, and so there was a natural affinity for the whole orphanage. One of the other things that Henry did before he got sick is, and maybe we'll talk about this later, I don't know, Patrick, but
tee it up.
He had the foresight to establish a steering committee. Before that, it was pretty much the Henry Rush show, right? And in about 2006, 2007, he formed this steering committee of some members of Westminster and Meeting House and a few other churches. And so I've been a part of that steering committee ever since, which has allowed me to see the evolution of the orphanage and the academy over the last 10 years or so. I used to chair the steering committee. I don't do that anymore. Rebecca Buckner does. But I have a perspective of kind of the good and the bad in some ways and the growing pains. And it has been a rewarding but painful process at the same time because there's just so many dynamics involved. But anyway, that's a long-winded way of saying I'm happy to be involved and continue to be involved.
Thanks. That's very helpful. Paul chairs International Missions right now, so you know that, and Rebecca couldn't make it today. I know there are others here who've gone. Link, you've gone how many times? Twice?
Four.
All right. I think you win again. And where's Marty? Marty also four?
She's organizing the...
Oh, right, the Mission Coffee, which you all should go to and see more slideshows of all of our missions. She's dressed as a missionary. Excellent. Let's see. Adrian was there with us in 2016. There's a picture. You're in the show. And we said, Gail, you were there. And you, how many times for you, Kay? Just once, okay. 2010, that's right. You were on that big trip. Okay. All right, well, we're going to, Philip, you're here from International Missions as well. And so thank you. This is going to be 101. We'll speed through. But, you know, where's Kenya? There's Kenya. In case you just need to place Kenya on a map, you all are so smart, but I wasn't when I started. So anyway, here we go. But where is the orphanage and academy? Roughly there on the red dot. You'll see it's not too far from the border with Uganda. The closest city, the largest city that nearby is Eldoret. Before, when Westminster would go, they would have to actually fly into Nairobi and drive a road that was not ideal, putting it mildly. But since I came on board, which is nice, we fly into Nairobi and fly to Eldoret and then take a 45-minute, well, how long is it? 45 minutes to get to Moy's Bridge. So that's real. That's where this is called the Rift Valley. So you hear often about the Rift Valley in the news. Here's where a lot of this has been a danger point right now because of what's going on in Somalia with some terrorist activity and some strife. So when you hear about what's going on, it's often up in here. So the history. The history, actually, we're doing a better job now of cataloging, okay, what actually did happen when? Because we have this oral history. We're trying to put it down on paper. And there are more than three starting dates. So officially, I mean, when did we start? So officially, the Orphanage and Academy were dedicated in 2004. So when we went in 2016, we shared in the 10-year anniversary. Yes, it was 12 years later, but there's a story behind that. But we did it together at 2016. But the genesis of this, at least as we're tracking it, goes back to at least 1995, when our presbytery, National Capital Presbytery, began to have a relationship with what's called El Bergen Presbytery in the Presbyterian Church of East Africa. And there was a memorandum of understanding that led to a work team that included, and there's some pictures here, this is Leslie Klingensmith, who is one of my predecessors as associate pastor. She's working here as part of one of the work teams that went to Kenya coming out of this initial MOU with the El Bergen Presbytery. And then they went back in 99, and this is, I believe, this might be, no, that's 2001. But there are other pictures, I think up here in 1999 that went out. And that is when I believe Henry met Stephen for the first time, when Henry Rush met Chege. You'll hear the name Chege frequently. In 2000, Chege was here as part of a delegation from Africa that was not without some controversy, that the powers that be, there were some jealousies in Africa as to who got to go on this trip and who didn't. But it was during that trip in 2000, forgive me, I got that wrong. They came, but then in 2000, Chege came back out of protests because he had been transferred to a church sort of far away from home. And so he came unbeknownst to anyone, even Henry, and even the presbytery here, just to get, I think he just described it as, I just needed to get away. And he delivered pizzas in the Washington metropolitan area while he was here. And then towards the end of his trip, he called Henry and Candace. It was close to Thanksgiving. And they invited him over for dinner. And it was around that time that he talked about his desire to create an orphanage for children in Africa, who in Kenya, whose parents had either died from AIDS or HIV or otherwise had nowhere to go. So really, thanks to Domino's Pizza and an invitation for Thanksgiving, this ministry really, really started. In 2001, Westminster began to offer support. Chege had begun breaking ground in around the year 2000. And that eventually led to that ribbon-cutting ceremony. But this is here, this picture, This picture here is with Reverend Stu Broberg, who was our pastor, and there's Mike Donnelly. And this was at, and Henry's right here, the initial dedication, which actually wasn't 2004, this is 2001. So this is why I'm telling you there's a lot of years that we could say this project began, but the one on the plaque now says 2004, so we'll go with that. We'll go with that.
So this picture here is 2001?
Yes. This picture. Yeah.
I just want to interject one thing. You see Phyllis in the picture there?
That's his wife right there.
His first wife.
Yeah.
Phyllis was the one.
Can you use the microphone? Sorry.
Chege said he was not done yet. He was a retired minister, and he was not done yet. And this is what he told me. And he didn't know exactly what to do, and that's why he came to the United States and was delivering pizzas, etc. But it was Phyllis, his wife, who, because he broached the subject with her about an orphanage or an academy. And she was the one who said, you know, we have always taken people into our home, always. What's the difference now to start an orphanage? But it was Phyllis who really kind of catapulted him into.
And it was her family's land.
Yes, exactly.
Upon which all of this is built.
Exactly.
Yeah. So already I'm noticing a trend here, like this notion of opening the door and saying welcome. 2000 and Phyllis, all of that. Look where it goes. Look where it leads. All right, so here's some pictures of the initial structures.
I remember staying in the orphanage the first time we went.
Right here?
We
stayed
in the box.
Okay.
In the first room I was.
And it's amazing where it's come from there. So now this is where we are now, only in part. So look at the Henry and Candace picture. It's a great tribute. It's not the greatest artistry. but it's, you can see the prominence with which they remember Henry and Candace and their time there. You'll see over here, this is Rhonda O'Bannon. She also is a key figure in this ministry, and she's from Old Presbyterian Meeting House, where they've hosted actually people from Kenya all the last few weeks. So, Paul, you noted the connections in the presbytery. So they do a great job there of remembering who has helped them and led them along the way. We're going to talk a little bit more about this bus later. May it rest in peace. But we'll talk about that. And when we get to the challenges part of this program, we'll get there. Let me see if I have the... Okay, so yeah, so this is the backside of the academy. And I skipped over that a bit. In 2006, they decided that, you know, in addition to providing a home, they wanted to provide a place for education. And so in your heads, I want to stress to you, as you go and talk about this ministry, you may think, oh, it's the orphanage, the orphanage, the orphanage. Do not end it with orphanage. End it with orphanage and academy, because the academy is really a very significant part of this ministry. In fact, resources and attention in many respects have grown towards the academy. But look, it's a really impressive structure when you go back to that. Sure. Yeah, well, let's do it. So these are the boys' dorms here. And this is not not the most recent picture. But these are the boys' dorms. These are the girls' dorms. The first structure was here. This was first. And right now this is the where they eat, where they have programs. When we visit, we spend a lot of time in here where they're doing dances and shows. We'll show you some of that. The kitchen, I believe that, if that's the right structure there. Yeah. That started off as a really rudimentary kitchen, and now it's got a full gas stove, which is properly vented thanks to Ken's insistence.
And running water.
Thanks to the Rotary. Yeah, so Don Smiles is a link to the Alexandria, the Rotary. Thank you, Mr. Woods. Provided a funding for, yeah. It's still wood burning, yeah.
You might comment that much of the foliage that you have in the other pictures, they grow most of all their own food.
Yeah, there is, and there's even more. In a more recent picture, they added a greenhouse or two, so they're growing their own produce at this point. Hey, Chrysler's, welcome. All right, let's see here. So that's the academy. I'm trying to think of what else. Okay, and the very important here, we'll start with the greenhouse. There it is. And here you see Don's and Craig. And like I said, they honor people that have helped them along the way. Well, two gentlemen, one of them named Don, laser pointer, and Craig Lewis, who's a member of the church, built a latrine. Don's John.
I'll tell you one real quick story. It's a riot. People were walking along the road just on the other side of the wall, and they kept staring at us, staring and looking at me and Craig. And so I finally asked George, one of the guys that was helping us, who was doing most of the work, frankly. I said, "Why are they staring?" He says, "Well, they've never seen a white man do manual labor. Never, ever, once." So I picked up another brick.
Right.
And onward I went.
I think the rest of the trip looked at you and said, "I've never seen Don do any work either." But
that would be true.
Okay. So that's good. I'm glad they made that comment. It put you to work. But yeah, so, and this is, we didn't even know that there was a greenhouse. We went out in last June, and lo and behold, there's a greenhouse. So they're hoping to be able to sell produce from there. They also want to use it for food. And Kenya had been, they're coming out of this, but there had been a famine in recent months. So the price of food was going way up. So they also needed the ability to add to their own food stocks. Yeah, Paul, go for it. Don, can we have the mic to Paul, please?
One of the things that inspired me from this trip was to do a lot of reading and just a little bit of history. He mentioned the Rift Valley. This town is on the west side of the valley, So like when you're driving from Nairobi to Eldoret or vice versa, you go down into the valley and then you have to climb back up. And this town of Eldoret was actually founded by South African voortrekkers. They did not come all the way from South Africa, though. They loaded their wagons and oxen onto a ship near Mozambique, came up to Mombasa, and then trekked to Nairobi, then down into the valley and up into Eldoret. It was a family of about 23, about 1901. And the reason is because that land up there around Eldoret and Moyes Bridge is very flat. It's on a plateau with wonderful soil, and it reminded them very much of the land in Transvaal. But then, unfortunately, when Kenya got independence, there were about 40-some families. Many of them left and went back to South Africa. But they started the farming up there and got it started and all around the town of Eldoret.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
But it's wonderful land, and that's kind of why they went there. So just a little history side.
Yeah. So I'm going to give you some facts and figures about the orphanage and the academy now, and this is a picture taken on our most recent trip of the kids at the end of the day at school. So if you don't know who Rebecca Buckner is, there she is there. Chege is here, and his son John is here, and there's Rhonda and Ken. Are you in this? There's Ken over here. I think that was it. So we have now 49 children living in the orphanage. So again, it's this structure here, which is because of the exposure you can't see. But 49 kids who actually sleep, eat, live at the orphanage and the academy, which is roughly around where it's been. I mean, it ebbs and flows every time we go. We just took on two more, and so it's closer. It's 49. We have about 8 that we support after they leave. So the academy, which has 130 students total, which includes those 49 from the orphanage. Some of those kids are scholarship students that we support with our funding. Some of them are from the community and are able to provide, for the most part, what the fees are to go to the school. And we have about 7 kids that they've graduated on. So this is K through 8. They don't say K through 8. It's class 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Once they graduate or take the exam that lets them go to secondary school, they'll go to local secondary schools, for which we provide, I believe, the fees to their public school fees, unlike here. Yeah.
If these kids are all orphans, what do they do after 8th grade? Do they live with families, or do they?
Oh, they can stay. So the kids who are orphans stay through the 12 years, and yeah.
Patrick, I might just say that one thing. You cannot adopt the children out of our orphanage. It's a nation-building orphanage where they can stay all the way up until they graduate. And you know, but you can't adopt. They don't go with families or anything.
Well, and another thing to say that is this ministry has evolved. So initially, again, it was children whose parents died from HIV/AIDS or they didn't have family. Very few, if any, of the kids now are completely orphaned. But they're extremely vulnerable, so they may come from families that have not the means of support. Some of them are victims of abuse. And so they're what we would describe as kids in very precarious situations that Chege knows about. He's still very much connected to the city, yeah.
And I might add, Chege didn't tell me, but somebody told me that Chege walked 20 miles in his Presbyterian shoes, which I then made sure he had some running shoes later. But he walked 20 miles because he heard about a child in the Rift Valley that needed, you know, a family that needed to have their child come. So he walked himself up into the hills. And, you know, it's 6,000-7,000 feet, some of it,
yeah.
You know. So he was really good. He had his ear to the ground and would do that.
Yeah, and he clearly still cares. He broke down a little bit talking about one family recently. It's still very much a passion of his that he's not doing this without the energy he brought to it initially, though he's aged, and we'll talk a little bit more about that too.
Is it also, correct me if this is not right, for those who know more than I do, but that during some of the periods of some of the difficult children from different tribes, from different persuasions, together in the same place, which was monumental in the area.
Yeah.
United.
Right.
United Orphanage, and that was the thing in 2007.
Yeah, 2007.
Seven election that they had two Luo children, and that was the dissenting group that got into the.
Yeah. Well, when Henry
Can you go closer to the mic so that thanks, sir.
When Henry and Chege first were talking about putting the orphanage together, the idea was that by incorporating all of the local tribes, which I think were six, but they've ended up with five at the school, it would help let the community know that this was a united orphanage, not just for one tribe. During the uprisings, if you want to call it, from the last elections that caused such grief. Not only did they have a number of people from the neighborhood camped out in the orchard area, other orphanages that were damaged by rioters, that problem was not incurred at United Orphanage. And it was felt that a lot of that had to do with the fact that all the tribes were represented.
Yeah. Thanks for the question. What'd you say?
I was just asking Donnie.
No, that's good.
Yeah, and to that end, this is a slide just from CNN just this week about the breakdown of the different tribes in Kenya. And if you're following the election, a lot of the support breaks down by tribal lines. And so this is something we're going to continue to have to watch.
Front page Friday.
Yeah, it's been.
It's the article's over there.
Okay.
And it's Luo and
Kikuyu, right.
Again.
All of the same. I'm trying to think of other facts and figures I can give you. I don't want to inundate you with that. But in terms of staff, there are 13 teachers on staff whose salaries we pay, and five staff people, including Chege and his son, headmaster, assistant headmaster, cooks, and guard. That's right. Okay. So a lot of this is history, but there's also where are we? And part of where we are now is just, A, to celebrate where we've come and what we have to celebrate. And that's here's the plaque that we dedicated in 2016, celebrating the 10-year anniversary. So this is, and again, this goes back to 95. We've been around for a while now. And it's appropriate that it's called a steering committee because I personally feel as though Henry and Chege and others before me were this sort of Big Bang founding moment and this just passion and light and energy and movement that sent this car, now I'm mixing my metaphors, on the road. And now those of us who are on the steering committee now are driving this thing. It's moving and it's coming from a place and we want to make sure we stay on the road and get to where we'd like to be. But we have
Keystone Cops.
Hopefully not that hapless. Is that the right word? So here, this is a celebration because this ministry, Henry, of course, is vital, central. He is the Big Bang founder of this with Chege, but it hasn't stopped with him that the Spirit has moved and so many people are involved, and a lot of them are seated right here in front of you. There's Gail. There's Rebecca. Ken's chairing the steering committee. I get to play in this patch too, and Adrian has been here. Melissa McClellan, who wanted to be here today, is singing in the choir, so she's busy rehearsing this morning. So many others, and Link, and Amy's been. I mean, just all these people, it's emanating and growing. Down here, I want to acknowledge a library. Some of you know Ed Willis. He's a member of our church, and he himself has been to the academy a couple of times and made sure that they had books. And so there's just a lot of people for whom this has become a part of their lives. We also have to celebrate that it's not just our church, and we've talked about this, and I'll just hit this briefly, that we're part of a steering committee that includes Westminster. This is Alan Stevens. He is the primary backer and link we have with Lewinsville Presbyterian Church in McLean. He went on our last trip, and he dedicated or gave out some Lewinsville T-shirts that the kids loved, and it was great to see and made me say, well, next time we're going to have some Westminster ones. We have a new logo that's being developed, so we'll have some shirts. This is Rhonda, or as they call her, Rhonda. Rhonda. And this is, not Duncan, but Kristen Campbell. She used to be a member here. She and her husband, and they moved up to the Hershey, Pennsylvania area. And her church, Dairy Presbyterian, has been a supporter for several years. So not just us, but this is great. This is just great. So this picture is taken. When was this taken? I'm not sure if I really put that note down. But on the right, reading the book, that's Miriam. And right now, she's finishing college. This is Philomena. She moved into the orphanage before it was all done in 2002. So she was one of the original kids that Chege saw and said, we need to help these people. She is a nurse. And they've come back. So it's like, the trees, leaves fall, feed the ground, nourishes the tree. We're starting to see, we're at that point in the life cycle where we're actually seeing the return. And that is so gratifying to see, even for me, who I was nowhere near close to being here when this started. This is Lydia. And this is Lydia, now a graduate. I can't remember what Lydia is doing. Rebecca is really the best at remembering some of these stories, but I forget where Lydia is now in life. Our last trip, the first day as we were coming from the airport, there's a big political rally that now President-elect Kenyatta was having, and so the roads were a mess, so we wanted to kill time, but also visit the Rift Valley Technical Training Institute, where we got to see Silas and Veronica. I was going to say Stephanie. Silas and Veronica. There's Veronica, and there's Silas. Again, they what's that? Oh, sorry. Veronica's studying hospitality management, and Silas is studying civil engineering, right? Ken, was it civil? Ken was excited as his fellow civil engineer. So we're seeing, again, where this is leading for the kids that we've supported, and that's just been great. Okay, some of the challenges. Ken referred to this as some of the growing pains that, we want to give you the holding hands, and isn't this great, isn't this nice, and it warms our hearts. But we in the steering committee actually were up late at night sometimes worrying about things and making sure and wanting things to be going well, because this is not an easy ministry by any stretch, not to mention the geography. There's cultural differences. But we just have just a range of things that we have to think about, including infrastructure and cost. These were taken on the most recent trip. So here, this was the girls' shower. There used to be a water tank here, and we found out that water tank was so heavy it collapsed into the girls' shower. And so we had to buy a new water tank and install it correctly. This is currently the boys' toilet above the boys' dorms, which doesn't work. You see a bar right there. They walk over to Don's John's on the other side. These are the new water tanks that Rotary Club and others have helped to fund. Just this ongoing infrastructure need, and I mentioned the bus. We bought that bus in 2014 at the cost of $30,000, or $20,000. And we got a couple years out of it, and then when we visited, found out it's completely dead.
First of all, thank you very much for all the information you've given us. It's very interesting indeed. I was intent on looking at the implications behind all those pictures. There was a consistency there.
Okay.
In all of the pictures, everybody, but especially the children, were very neatly dressed, which means that the community is very intent and interested in education and the situations like the ones you've shown us.
So the when you define what you mean by community, you mean the community, our community, the one we're doing. Yeah, education is a key component. Can I hold that? Because there's something I want to show you at the end that will speak directly to that. Let me be doom and gloom, not doom and gloom, but let me be heavy for a minute and talk about what we have to think about. So we recently approved money out of the Henry Rush Memorial Fund to purchase a new bus for the Orphanage Academy. which we think will cost $40,000 for a replacement bus. Teachers. Yeah.
Just 1 minute before that. I believe someone from our church. I believe someone from our church donated money for the first well at the place.
Okay, yeah.
So, I mean, the whole shooting match.
Oh, this has been a cacophony of giving has led to this.
Right.
Yeah. That's okay. You know, one of the things we also are facing, the teachers at the academy don't make as much as teachers in the public schools. And so we want to make sure we retain and hire and keep good teachers at the school. It costs about $85,000 to $90,000 a year to run the Orphanage and Academy. I'm looking at Ken, who's often the keeper of those figures, of which Westminster provides around $70,000 a year through our budget and through the Alternative Giving Bazaar. So that leaves about $15,000 from these other partners, which is shy of 20%. So just to give you a sense of what our responsibility is for all this to happen, Paul.
Yeah, our budget, we have moved from when I first came on the committee, we had about 20 to 25,000 was on budget, Westminster budget for United Orphanage and Academy. We have moved it up to about 40,000. Okay. So we're about 40,000 on budget. And part of the stewardship campaign this year is we're trying to get it up to 50,000. And I think we'll be comfortable with that. And then the rest is from contributions from the other churches that are part of the steering committee, as well as from the Alternative Giving Bazaar, as well as donations we get, like from Rotary Club that Donnie got for the water, and individual contributions. The bus was a big hit, and that was why we had to go to the foundation, to the Henry Rush Fund, Memorial Fund. But so that's kind of the way the budget is right now. We're trying to get it up to 50,000, which we kind of think will be good, because originally a lot of this stuff was not on budget at all. But as costs have gone up, and it just was better to put it on budget if the church was going to make the commitment, which we've made.
Yeah.
So that's where we are. From the committee standpoint.
Thanks. Then another major piece of this, and this will be where we'll stop the challenges part, though there are others, is one of the things on our mind is how do we ensure the long-term viability of this from a leadership standpoint? Chege is in his upper 70s. He's still full of vitality, but he's not getting younger. And we saw when Henry had his stroke in 2010, that it fell on the committee and others to take that beginning impulse and with structure and thought and community work to continue it. So we're actively in conversation every time we go about what's this going to look like, Chege, when you're not wanting to do this anymore or not in a position to do this anymore. This is his son, John, his eldest, who's very active. He's the kind of the day-to-day manager of things on the academy and the orphanage. But his gifts are different from Chege's. And so what's that?
Very quiet.
Yeah, just quieter and, yeah, just not the same, different kind of leadership. And so when we went out in 2017, just a few months ago, we had an encounter with Stephen, his grandson. And he lives in Nairobi. He doesn't live at the academy or the orphanage, but Chege seemed to be wanting to include him in a more significant way, and we saw that as potential, and that's where we are right now with that, is that we see his role as growing and hoping that his role might grow with the family. This is very much a family operation. It's the family's land, the family's our resources, and so we're just mindful of how will this proceed. We haven't got all that figured out yet, so it's a question that we have to live into. Okay. And lastly, we talked briefly, but just the context in Kenya right now is a question mark with the two elections now, most recently on Thursday. The current president, Kenyatta, was declared the winner with 98% of his second vote, but the challenging candidate, Odinga, who's been a challenger and for the last 30, 40 years, is calling for resistance of some kind. And so we don't know what that's going to look like. things have been pretty stable in the Eldoret area. This, a lot of what you're hearing in the news is in Nairobi. But we're just keeping an eye on things, and that's just a question mark that we have. Okay, I want to make sure we have some time to talk about, let's see, don't want to show this video. It's short, we'll do it, because it leads into a question that I want.
Yeah, there's the academy. Right.
Yeah. That's right.
When the first orphan Starge arrived, there were six little children, five girls, one boy. Of the girls, one of them, a small girl, came in carrying her even smaller sister to become orphans. They had nowhere to go. If you've ever been to Africa, the children steal your heart. They come out to greet you. They are just the warmest, most wonderful experience seeing all these kids. And I think it just seemed natural to Henry, if there was anything he could do, he wanted to be a part of it.
When we pulled in to the compound, and you could hear this very high, sweet sound. And we thought, are those birds at night chirping? And when we got there, it was all the children outside, and they were singing a welcome song for us.
And it was an immediate sense of hospitality and welcome and joy.
It's sort of, we are happy to receive you. Mm-hmm. We are happy to receive you. Mm-hmm. We are happy to receive you.
The United Orphanage and Academy, UONA, located in the Rift Valley of Kenya, was founded in 2001 as a home for six children. Due to increased need, the orphanage was expanded, and today it houses 54 children that come from the tribes that inhabit the neighboring areas. The commingling and reconciliation of children from various ethnic backgrounds was a founding principle of the orphanage. In 2006, the Academy began offering classes for the children at the orphanage and in the local community, and nearly 200 local children study there today.
Opportunity.
Hope.
Life.
Transformation.
Home.
Family.
We need to continue to raise money, and we only get it from donations. So we're counting on everybody out there listening to this video. The best thing to do initially, obviously, is send as big a check as you can. And you know, no check is too big.
No check is
too big. If after that you want to come to an informational meeting on trips, that would be the next step to do. And I would urge you to do it. You can come and find out what the trip is like. And I guarantee you it will change you. From whatever to whatever, I can't say for each person, but you won't be the same after you've been there.
So some of that, don't do it, cancel. Oh, whew, that was close. We may have just missed it. So some of that information was a little different, the numbers and the funding streams, as Paul talked about. But the quote at the end, not the big check part, but you've got a little bit of Henry in you there. That's impressive. But the comment that Don makes about it's going to change you, and you said, I'm not sure how it'll change you, but it will change you. You will not be the same. And what I would hope we could do within the last 5 to 10 minutes, if we can push to 10:50, is to have you perhaps share what has changed for you, and what has that change given you, and what maybe has that change asked of you? And we'll see just who feels called to start.
I'll speak.
Great.
There's a quick story that I haven't told anybody, and it's self-serving, so I apologize. But I want to tell everybody here. when I was there the first time, I wanted to help. And I'll make it brief. I didn't have enough money to make any difference. So I'm sitting there thinking, what could I do? So rather than giving $1,000 or $2,000 that I might be able to give, I decided with my wife that we would have a fundraiser at our house. Some of the people here were there. We had a fundraiser at our house. It was great. Everyone had a good time. I brought the checks up to Nancy B. And prior to that, I have to regret for 1 minute. The third floor of the academy was not finished. There was rebarb coming up through the floor. Okay, there were no railings. There was nothing to keep kids from falling off the top of the orphanage, of the academy. I said, this is crazy. This can't be. How much does it cost to finish it? They said $26,000. I went, oh, well, you know, not exactly in my budget. So I thought about it, and when I got back, I talked with my wife, and we decided to have a fundraiser. And we heard about a fund that was available through the Presbytery of matching funds. And we also thought about the cost of finishing the third floor of the orphanage. And lo and behold, when I gave the checks to Nancy B., it was $13,000, which was exactly half of what we needed. So got through that. I never said that to anybody.
Yeah. So is that matching amount that was exactly got you the 26? Yeah.
13 doubled 26, yeah. Which is exactly what they told me would cost to finish. And when I went back again in 2012, it was all finished.
How has that changed you, Don?
Poor. No. I don't know. I mean, I think it's changed me a lot.
Microphone.
I'll let someone else answer that question. I had enough time.
Okay. Ask Don after class.
The first time I was in Africa, it'll be 30 years ago in February, and it only took once. I've seen all these kids coming spilling out with their little hands up, and I mean, a lot of them are still toddlers. They can hardly run, but wherever you go in Africa, all these little kids come out to see you, and they put their hands on you, and they love it when you reach down and touch them, and it's the most amazing thing. So it's after that, everything is just you want to do something to help make a difference in their lives.
Oh boy, I don't know where to start. What Candace was saying, that was an interesting thing when we went to the six, before the academy was there, we went to the six schools that all the kids were farmed out to. And I remember, and I've got pictures of the kids coming up and touching my skin. They had never seen a white person. The children. You know, the adults are different, but they're so loving, and they're so just eager to learn and eager to, they're just the best. And I don't know, I don't have anything to say like Donnie has with the big, that was a great thing you did for the,
I didn't do anything.
Well, but you organized it. So, but I just, yes, your heart goes out. And as I told you before, I'm paired with Esther Wanjuri, whose sister is Miriam, and they were both there. And I think Esther has gone into the Air Force,
okay.
The Air Guard, or whatever they call it. But it just to see a child come up and be something that they never could have been out in the rural areas. And, you know, thanks to Cheggy and everybody involved, because it takes a village.
Well, I think it takes a village. The thing that struck me the most was when I went was when we were all gathered in the main room, and they have their welcoming sort of ceremony and the singing and dancing. I remember that evening I shot an email back to my wife and I said, there's a lot of love out here. And I think that summed it up.
Well, again, where to start? I suppose for me, I think perhaps I've had two oh wow moments or two epiphanies. The first was in 2006 when I first went there. It was oh wow. And I remember all these little children. Most of them all seemed like just babies to me at the time. And then 6 years later, I came back. And guess what? They weren't little kids anymore. They were young adults in some cases. And I thought, wow, this is, it's just like back home. But it also set the stage for something that we realized at the time. We should have seen it early on, but you're just in the moment all the time. You're always looking to figure out what the next problem is you're going to solve. And at that point, is in 2012, we realized these children are going to grow up and they're going to have a new set of needs that have to be met. And so we, forgive me for talking mechanics here for a second,
yeah,
but we formed what we affectionately call the Orphan Launch Project. How are we going to transition these children from babies to young adults to adults, functioning adults in Kenya, to help grow the country? So we established this Orphan Launch Project, which was long-term vision of trying to make sure that we could get these children educated and out on their own, and frankly, out of the orphanage, because we had new children we needed to bring in. Right? So that was 2012, and then lo and behold, we go back earlier this year, and some of those children who we thought about needing to launch, well, guess what? They had launched. They had gone to college, or they were off working. We had, you know, this was where we were making a difference. And for me, that was a wonderful moment that I wanted to share with everybody.
We've heard throughout that this is a magnificent thing. It's led by Checky, a Presbyterian minister. And he is shedding God's love on everybody there. I think we're doubly blessed by having a minister committed to serving.
Sorry. So now I'm going to turn my gaze on you all gathered and how you can be involved and connected to this ministry. Of course, there's financial support. I'll let Don speak to that. There's continuing to read the paper and just be connected to what's happening in Kenya with an awareness that it's not just strangers out there that we're talking about. It's the kids and the people on these screens. I think there's something to this notion of being open and willing to open the door to whatever might be closed in you and or your home. Or the Spirit seems to do a lot with an initial yes. So consider in your own lives, not just with this academy and orphanage, but where you're being called to open your door, and use these stories as a sort of promissory note, like, oh, when I do this, it's going to take me places. Where it's taken me and it's taken so many of you. We didn't get a chance to really give you time to ask specific questions about the orphanage from this presentation. I apologize for that. But if you do have others, please see me or anybody here, and we can answer those. Many of the questions you're going to ask, we're the ones asking them too. So you can join us in asking the questions. And if you have feedback as to how you would feel more connected to this ministry, let us know. We will have future trips, and you can keep your ears open for that. We don't have one on the books for 2018 yet, but our hope is to go as close to annually as possible, because it really is being there in person that you not only really know what's happening, but you keep those relationships vital. So just want to thank you for your time and interest and attention. I'm going to close with one more video with just, again, a reminder of the holding of hands, and we'll end with a prayer.
Education. Father, mother, I want to learn. Learning.
Let us pray. Lord, thank you for those kids and all the ways you have touched people to lead us to be holding hands with them from afar and in person. We honor those who've gone before us, especially Henry. And with us now still, Chege and all the work he does with his family and the members of the steering committee and alumni of trips and hopefully future participants of trips. And ask that you would help us to open the doors of our hearts and our minds on this Reformation Sunday when we think about ways in which the church has become a new body while still very much connected to its origins. Help that be the case also with the United Orphanage and Academy and with each of us in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you, everyone. I've got to dash to get robed up, so talk to them. Look at the book.